65 days a year.
Good afternoon and welcome to another edition of AHA Presents About Education. I'm Neil Kreisel and I'm your host every week right here on AM 1290, repeated at 10 and Saturdays at 4. We're brought to you by Deckers, makers of Uggs and Hokas, Pierre LaFon Wendy Foster offering fine clothes, good food and vintage wines, Montecito Bank and Trust proudly serving our communities and their financial needs for over 40 years, Habitat for Humanity building strength, stability and self-reliance through shelter, and CSU Channel Islands. No matter which of their academic programs you choose, you will be at the center of your educational experience. And we're lucky today to have Marcos Vargas with us, the executive director of the Fund for Santa Barbara. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
We have as one of our sponsors, I just mentioned, CSU Channel Islands. And I was lucky enough two weeks ago, to go to one of the islands with them and do an exploration around the furthest island. Mm. And we were looking at indigenous Indian burial sites. And they've mm-hmm. made some really amazing discoveries there. 10,000 and 12,000-year-old bones have been discovered. And before the show, we're talking that Marcos is involved with, besides the Fund for Santa Barbara, the Sundancer Group, mm-hmm. which is, tell us a little bit about
that. Well, actually, it's not the Sundancer Group. You're maybe thinking about Robert Redford and his effort.
By the way, this is a radio show. Marcus looks just like Robert Redford. So take my word for it.
No, well, I'm a Sundancer Lakota tradition, but my background is Chicano, Mexican-American with my heritage from the south of the border. But at one point, thought that it would be a good idea to utilize the knowledge of our indigenous ancestors towards healing our communities and empowering communities. So I had a chief, a Lakota chief, Archie Fire Lame Deer, who sponsored me, and I became a Sundancer, which means I have the authority to run different ceremonies, sweat lodges, vision quests, things like that. But it's about, you know, a service to the community and promoting more community engagement.
I don't want to get totally off track here, but what's so amazing about the way people today think about their history, maybe some people in this country will think about the Spanish coming here and look at every once in a while some of the indigenous people. But when you look at Santa Rosa Island that has bones from Indians buried 12,000 years ago, mm-hmm. you realize that history didn't begin with Columbus.
Absolutely. And the reality is we all have indigenous blood. You go back, whether, you know, Germanic or Celtic or whatnot. And so, but more than ever, I think indigenous knowledge is important in these days of climate change and global warming and the need for a sustainable planet. I think it's time we got back to some of that indigenous knowledge that we're all connected, all living things.
Well, is that why the current administration doesn't want immigration? They want to keep everybody able to have this indigenous common thread?
No.
I don't think so, no. Let's go talk about the Fund for Santa Barbara. Give us a little bit of history about what it is, how it got started.
Well, incredible organization. It started in 1980. A group of community activists came together, folks who were concerned with the environment and women's rights and so forth, and thought we needed a foundation here that was more grassroots, that was about recognizing that social change, some of the most meaningful social change, takes place in our communities. So they started a foundation, very, very small foundation, and over 37 years it's grown. It's very unique in that it funds social justice work, and so it's economic, social, environmental, political justice, and it's led by community members. So these decisions on who gets these $400,000 grants every year or in grants every year is decided by community activists who make a big commitment to understand the issues in the community and to read proposals and to do site visits and make decisions on that. And so That's the foundation, again, dedicated to social justice.
You know, we here in the People's Republic of Santa Barbara talk mm-hmm. about social justice, and mm-hmm. people really understand mm-hmm. what it means. Mm-hmm. But think about that, the conversation you'd have in certain states in this country about what social justice is. Right. You know, it's for us, it's a given. Mm-hmm. But for many people, it's not a given. It's almost like the polarization has made the defining social justice somewhat more problematical.
Interesting.
And you know, it's really, I think, part of the reason we have so many issues today, because if we were all looking at social justice in the same way, maybe we wouldn't have a problem with throwing a bunch of kids out of this country. But enough politics for the moment.
Oh, politics is good.
Okay,
but go ahead.
So, when you talk about the philanthropy, one of the things that in your website you talk about an alternative model. What do you mean by an alternative model?
By alternative model, what makes the Fund for Santa Barbara unique is that, again, decisions are made by community members, by folks in the community who understand the issues that they're facing. Unlike most large foundations that have large endowments, those decisions are generally made by several program managers and a board of directors. In this case, my board takes their recommendation directly from community leaders who are involved with what we call a grant-making committee. And it's a year-round process. They become very actively involved with understanding the community and making decisions that will impact funding for organizations that are involved with, again, social, economic, environmental justice efforts here in town.
And who are the primary funders of the fund? Is it individuals? Is it other foundations?
Primarily donors. It's primarily donors. And so a majority of our funds come from individuals here in our own community. And we do have some philanthropic partnerships with other foundations like the Santa Barbara Foundation and others, who also provide funding to the Fund for Santa Barbara. But it's mainly individual donors.
What is you said 400,000? Is that what you give away each year?
Yeah, since we started, it's been about 5 million. Every year about 400,000, and we do this again through two grant cycles every year, where organizations come to us and apply for funds for the Fund for Santa Barbara. We do that in the spring and in the fall, and then we also have something called emerging need grants, which are up to $3,000 for groups that are having emergency needs in our community. And lately, we've been getting a lot of requests around the whole area of immigrant rights, protecting immigrants during these really challenging times with the administration's very anti-immigrant policies.
And you have community leaders that sit on your giving
grant-making committee,
there's other ways you help them as well, isn't there?
Right. We also do what we call capacity building. So every year we'll have about 14 trainings, workshops, both in North County up in Santa Maria area as well as here in Santa Barbara, trainings on from board governance to grassroots fundraising and even community organizing. So those are provided, and we get quite a lot of participation by local organizations. We also do technical assistance. And by that, I don't mean fixing computers. We actually sit down with folks and help them with the development of their organization, giving them direct technical assistance to support their efforts. And we also have a Youth Making Change program, which is really unique, and that's 30 youth, 15 up in North County and 15 in South County, are given $15,000 each to give to local youth-led efforts in their community. And that's our leadership development program. And it's building philanthropy from the bottom up with our young people.
As you know, this show is called AHA Presents About Education. So a lot of the focus on the show is about teens and how to make teens able to get through life.
That's right.
So you have an initiative which, you know, is right up AHA's alley. And when you say you give 15, you don't mean 15,000 per teen, do you?
No, $15,000 for the group to give, to allocate out and grant out to local youth-led programs. And so it's a very gratifying program. I remember hearing testimony from one young man up in Santa Maria who said, you know, for the longest time, I wanted to get out of Santa Maria as soon as I could. As soon as I graduate, I'm out of here. But through this program, he's learned that, and he expressed this, and that he learned that there's a lot of folks trying to make his community a better place. And so he wants to be part of that. So he decided he'll go away to college. He's going to come back and be involved. So this is an opportunity for young people to understand philanthropy, but also to understand how social change works in their community by helping to support group individual groups, youth-led groups that are engaged in that kind of work.
Do they ever express a sense of irony? Because some of these kids come from families that can't afford to give them lunch. Mm-hmm. Do they express any irony that here they are giving money away to somebody else?
No, not at all. Because, you know, if you really think about it, even among people in poverty, actually, I think those at the lower income level probably give a higher percentage of their income to philanthropic efforts, including through the church. And so the reality is they know very much about giving. Their families and the community are very much about giving to their community. This gives them an opportunity to actually give monetarily to groups that are doing this kind of grassroots efforts in their own community.
And one of the associations you have is with the Santa Barbara Film Festival, and that's is a surprise. How does the film festival get involved?
Well, actually, this is an effort that's evolved and doesn't exist in the way it had been before. We had a grant to the film festival for social justice films, and they're continuing to do that. We decided the fund just a couple years ago to instead focus on arts for change, and instead we're having twice a year we're doing two activities that promote art and social change. And so they could be an art show, a film showing, and that type of thing. But we're not exactly directly involved with the film festival any longer.
You're listening to AHA Presents About Education on AM 1290 KZSB, and we'll be right back.
For more than 20 years now, the unique landscape and people of the Santa Barbara community have helped grow Deckers brands into the lifestyle footwear leaders they are today. Newly opened at their headquarters in Goleta, the Deckers brand showcase allows you to explore and shop the UGG, Teva, Sanuk, Hoka, and Ah New brands while you're likely to discover something new or potentially receive an in-store special offer. At 250 Coramore Drive in Goleta, the showcase is open to the public 10 a.m. to 7 Monday through Saturday and 11 to 5 on Sunday.
You're invited to dine indoors or on the secluded garden patio, the sunny patio, or the covered creekside patio with fireplace at Pierre Lafond's Montecito Wine Bistro, where you'll enjoy the popular pizzas and many other dishes from the wood-burning oven, daily specials from Chef Victor, and selections from the elevated wine menu featuring Lafond and Santa Barbara Winery wines. Open daily at 11 for lunch, wine, cocktails, dinner, incredible desserts, and a daily happy hour from 3 to 6 with very unique appetizers, in the Plaza del Sol, Montecito Village.
Habitat for Humanity of Southern Santa Barbara County is building strength, stability, and self-reliance through shelter. Habitat has completed construction on 19 new homes for affordable homeownership. We'll build 3 new affordable homes this spring and has repaired over 35 homes through the A Brush with Kindness program. To learn more about how you can support Habitat by volunteering, donating, or shopping at the Habitat Restore, visit sbhabitat.org or call 692-2226. Here's a question. Do you enjoy experiencing the best of Santa Barbara? Tasty restaurants, scenic hiking, local banking experts. That's right, local banking experts. Montecito Bank and Trust was voted best bank again by the Santa Barbara Independent, Santa Barbara News Press, and San Ynez Valley News Readers. Plus, they have over 40 years of experience, 10 branches from Solvang to Westlake, a convenient on-the-go mobile banking app, and a savvy team of local decision makers. Visit Montecito.bank today. Montecito Bank and Trust, member FDIC.
Welcome back to AHA Presents About Education. AHA, using innovative social-emotional learning and character building to help teens. We're here today with Marcos Vargas, the Executive Director of the Fund for Santa Barbara. So tell us a little bit about your beginnings. Did you grow up in Santa Barbara?
No, I didn't. Actually, I was born in Santa Paula, just south of here in Ventura County. And my dad was a farm worker and then became a longshoreman, eventually wound up moving out towards Orange County, and he went to work in San Pedro, and we I was actually raised in many ways in Orange County in the days that they used to call it the other side of the Orange Curtain. Pretty interesting place to grow up as a Mexican kid.
And that's why you're a right-wing Republican?
Exactly.
Good. Yeah.
It was interesting. My brother was a conscientious objector, and so By seventh grade in middle school, I was quite active in the anti-war movement, and so not only was I one of the only Mexicans in the school, but I was the labeled communist as well, and so it was an interesting time. to grow up. But it was also a good experience as well to learn how, you know.
Have you been watching the Vietnam show on PBS?
No, I haven't.
I thought I knew everything about Vietnam because I grew up in that period. And in the first episode, they talk about how, what's his name? The guy that was the head of North Vietnam.
Ho Chi Minh
went to the American administration in 1917 when World War I was ending and had a note prepared to President Wilson and submitted it saying, you know, I represent Vietnam and, you know, we'd like to be part of what you envision as this new worldwide freedom. And we would love to be involved with you and have America help us. And the person he gave it to didn't give it to Wilson, didn't give the note to Wilson. Hmm. And, you know, it's so interesting about how, you know, the world turns so many. And there was a few more examples of his attempt before he got involved with the communists to make a deal with the West. Hmm. And no one would listen. How, you know, it's part of, you know, the world's ultimate result is sometimes just a matter of, you know, a 1 second mistake that somebody makes.
Right, right. But, you know, I have to say, as an anti-war activist at an early age, it was quite a turning point. Certainly impressed on me the value of activism and being involved in your community. I remember when the war ended, I'm getting on my bicycle and right around my neighborhood, you know, saying the war is over and believing that people can make change, that we could actually end a war. And so that instilled in me and hopefully my kids and people I've been around get involved. It you can make a difference and you can make an impact.
And, you know, this is a subject that's in the news today. You know, should the football players put their knee down to protest what is a clear problem facing a great many Americans? And, you know, the discussion about the symbolism of the flag and the protest social injustice in a vast number of people in this country is still a discussion today. It seems never to be solved.
Right, right. Well, it continues. And here in our own communities as well, many ways here in California and Santa Barbara, we live in a bit of a bubble, but racial justice issues exist here as well. And you just need to look in particular at North County and Santa Maria area where right after the election, you had pickup trucks with young men with Confederate flags driving through the Latino community, and so it's here. But it's one that I think very gratified to see how we come together and try and address those very complex, difficult issues.
Isn't the art of changing people's minds somewhat lost today on many people? If social justice is what drives you, it requires a technique, and I don't mean to belittle it, but a technique to discuss those issues with people that aren't predisposed to believe, how to communicate with the other side.
Absolutely. The reality is we're all just a reflection of our life experiences, and so I think it behooves us to understand that factor and to realize that, yes, it's difficult, these conversations, but they do need to happen, and they do need to happen in a civil way and in a respectful way.
You grew up in Southern California, and you went to school and was in Orange County?
Went to Long Beach State, elementary and middle school and high school in Orange County, and then went to Long Beach State for about a year, then transferred to UCSB.
Ah, so the UCSB,
The connection was there, yeah. And so actually this is like starting this job at the Fund for Santa Barbara 2 years ago was like coming home in many ways. Many of the community activists that I work with as an undergraduate here are still around. And in many ways, I still believe that Santa Barbara is the heart of the Chicano movement. So much of what we call that whole movement for social change, you know, the farm worker movement and so forth, has its roots here in Santa Barbara.
And you also went to UCLA?
Right. I went to UCLA for my master's in urban planning and later on a PhD in urban planning.
And how does urban planning fit in with your current job? Are you going to redesign the city also? Is this part of your...
No, actually, my focus was primarily understanding urban issues, but also how to transform communities in many ways from the bottom up through grassroots community organizing. So my focus was actually on the power of social movements and community organizing and how historically they have transformed our communities as well. My master's thesis was actually on the impact of multiracial, racial, community-based organizations around the state of California and how they were impacting politics in the state.
And the 2 years ago, you joined the Fund for Santa Barbara. What were you doing before that?
I had founded an organization, CAUSE, and that's the Central Coast Alliance United for a Sustainable Economy. Long acronym, started actually at my kitchen table, and came out of the living wage movement, the idea that working people, if you're working, you deserve to not be in poverty, you deserve a living wage. And so we organized a coalition. It was the Ventura County Living Wage Coalition. It had effectively moved several living wage ordinances, and CAUSE was developed for the very reason to support community efforts like the living wage effort. So as a result, we wound up passing 5 living wage ordinances in the region. And those ordinances required that cities that contract out their services, that those contractors pay their workers better than a minimum wage. And that grew into an environmental justice effort as well, including the stopping the liquefied natural gas terminal off the coast of Oxnard.
Yeah, I just noticed yesterday or 2 days ago, Target increased its minimum wage to not only well above the current minimum wage, but the promise by 2022 or something, they'll be up to $20. And I don't know how much of that is because they can't find people or because they're, you know, morally committed to doing the right thing.
Well, we've always made the case that paying a good, decent wage and benefits promotes good business sense and promotes a great, strong productivity and keeps their employees happy, and they do a better job. So we've always used that argument, but certainly it's investing in your own community as well. When people are paid a decent wage, especially if you raise the wages of low wage working people, they're not going to put their money in offshore banks. They're going to put their money in their local community. So it makes good economic sense at the local level.
Just to plug my other show, Money Talk, which is on at 2 o'clock on Mondays, we discussed a few weeks ago the Walmart experiment. Walmart, as everyone knows, the biggest retailer in the country, and other than Amazon. It had problems in the last 2-3 years, and they brought a new CEO in about 2 years ago. And what he did is the opposite of what everyone else thought he should do. He actually raised wages.
Right.
And it was a big success because what he found was that people would be more interested in staying, learning about the firm's culture, becoming more likely to be able to move up the ladder. Morale was improved and sales improved. So there is empirical evidence to support the notion that not only doesn't it hurt, but it actually can help.
Absolutely.
A company. So you can do the right thing and actually help yourself. And it was Walmart that did it of all places. You're listening to AHA Presents About Education on the Santa Barbara News Press radio station. We'll be right back.
Available only at the company's headquarters in Goleta, the new Deckers brand showcase features the latest footwear from UGG, Teva, Sanuk, Hoka, and Ah New brands. You're invited to stop by to experience firsthand what makes Deckers brand so unique. Discover new product and try on a range of offerings from your favorite Deckers brand at their retail stores. Now open to the public 10 a.m. to 7 p.m. Monday through Saturday and from 11 to 5 on Sunday at 250 Coromar Drive in Goleta.
In 1962, Pierre Lafond founded the first post-prohibition commercial winery in Santa Barbara County. In 1972, he planted his first vineyard in the San Ynez Valley west of Buellton and later hired legendary winemaker Bruce McGuire to continue to build on the stellar reputation that Santa Barbara Winery has achieved for more than 50 years. Today, you're invited to experience the award-winning wines at Santa Barbara Winery at the corner of Yananali and Anacapa and the Lafond Winery at 6855 Santa Rosa Road in Buellton.
Habitat for Humanity of Southern Santa Barbara County is building strength, stability, and self-reliance through shelter. Habitat has completed construction on 19 new homes for affordable homeownership. We'll build 3 new affordable homes this spring and has repaired over 35 homes through the A Brush with Kindness program. To learn more about how you can support Habitat by volunteering, donating, or shopping at the Habitat Restore, visit sbhabitat.org or call 692-2226. Here's a question. Do you enjoy experiencing the best of Santa Barbara? Tasty restaurants, scenic hiking, local banking experts. That's right, local banking experts. Montecito Bank and Trust was voted best bank again by the Santa Barbara Independent, Santa Barbara News Press, and Santa Ynez Valley News Readers. Plus, they have over 40 years of experience, 10 branches from Solvang to Westlake, a convenient on-the-go mobile banking app, and a savvy team of local decision makers. Visit Montecito.bank today. Montecito Bank and Trust, member FDIC.
Welcome back to AHA Presents About Education. AHA, improving attitude, creating social harmony, bridging the achievement gap for teens. I'm Neil Kreisel, and we're here with Marcos Vargas, Executive Director of the Fund for Santa Barbara. Do you have on your staff a fundraiser?
I am that person.
And do you have someone that changes the light bulbs?
Absolutely. I do that in the evenings. Now, we have a staff, and we do share the fundraising, as well as we have a staff member who's primarily in charge with the grant-making program. Another staff member, Gary Clark, who's in charge with capacity building, the trainings and the workshops and so forth. So we got a few folks.
How many people in total?
I think we have 7 staff members now, 2 up in North County in our Santa Maria office, and as well as the 5 staff here in Santa Barbara.
So today the administration released an outline for the tax proposal, which unfortunately didn't provide any details as to how these tax cuts are going to be paid for. But one of the things that most pundits said is while they didn't specifically say what would be cut, they said one thing that won't be cut will be deductions for charitable giving, mm-hmm. which I guess is a good thing.
Absolutely, yeah.
In this environment, and the environment is not just, you know, today with everything that's going on, is that we have, you know, more not-for-profits in this town than per capita than probably any place in America.
I've heard that.
Oh, yeah, and it's true. So I don't mean noise in a negative sense, but how do you get your message across, particularly with a small staff and without a dedicated fundraiser? How do you get out there and get people to pay attention?
Well, first of all, the many organizations that do exist are by far doing important work in our communities and are very much needed. I think there is a need, and something we're seeing more and more is organizations working together more collaboratively, and that's something we definitely promote, is coalition building and collaboration. And I think more and more organizations at the local level are recognizing that one organization can't do it all. We need to be working side by side with each other and seeing how we can maximize our effectiveness. So what we do is again, we have workshops, and we're out in the community a great deal, letting organizations know that our funds exist, encouraging folks to apply, but also have them recognize that we don't fund bricks and mortar, we don't fund necessarily direct services, we fund social change. And so if an organization is actively engaged with advocacy and community organizing, leadership development that's about changing their community and improving the conditions in the community, then that's the kind of thing we support. We convene. It's so interesting when I arrived here, seeing how well-respected this organization is after 37 years. We're the organization that we can offer the table for different groups to come together that wouldn't ordinarily even be speaking to one another. During the whole issue of IV governance in Isla Vista, we were the organization that convened all the different stakeholders to come up with a solution towards moving forward some independence there in Isla Vista. On the increase in the minimum wage, we kind of got in front of that and engaged probably about 75 local nonprofit groups about what the impact would be. And the reason we did that was because 15 years before that, when there was a living wage movement or campaign going on, one of the biggest opponents was the nonprofit sector, who couldn't see themselves being able to pay a living wage at the time. As a result of our efforts, what came out of that was some good information towards that was actually utilized in a local effort to pass a local city living wage, which minimum wage rather, eventually became a statewide increase in minimum wage. But what also came out of that was the nonprofit sector recognizing that we can't allow Santa Barbara's nonprofit sector to be Santa Barbara's poverty employment sector, and that we need to pay people good wage as well. So I'm getting to is the fund has a really great opportunity to engage the nonprofit groups, to help convene, to do problem solving, as well as to provide funding and technical assistance and training.
But one of the challenges I would imagine you have is if you were the Heart Association, everyone is at risk for a heart attack. So there's no political discussion. Mm-hmm. But if you're involved in something that may be not what a donor has buying into, you know, and there are people in this community that maybe don't think some of the issues that you think is important are important. So you, in a sense, have a particular challenge is that you have, in fact, many not-for-profits keep out of politics because they don't want to turn people off. But you, you, by definition, have to exclude some people who, you know, are not going to support the minimum wage. They just have an economic view that's different.
Absolutely.
So your challenge, I would imagine, is even more difficult because you're dealing with a smaller pool of donors.
Absolutely. Although it's not that small. It's actually rather large. And, you know, I'm very heartened by this community. When right after the election, when Trump was elected, the Fund for Santa Barbara got into kind of a listening mode. And we met with our donors. We met with our grantees, organizations doing the work, many of our partner organizations. And what we heard is that, you know, people care about their communities, but more importantly, they care about the least fortunate. And what was at the top of the list, and certainly the environment is very important, and this is a community that cares a great deal about the environment, but what was at the top of the list of their concerns was the plight of immigrants under a Trump administration. So, and as a result, we've seen, I've had had donors come up to me and said, you know, would like to contribute to efforts to protect our local immigrant community, those without documents. So, yes, you're right. It's a narrow, potentially a narrow group of donors, but I think this community has a long history of caring for the environment and caring for social justice and certainly caring for the least fortunate in our community.
So you are a very good speaker, and we talked before about being able to have a conversation with both sides.
Exactly.
So let me ask you how you would answer this question, which I think is a question that, you know, it should be asked explicitly, but it really implicitly is what I think is causing so much of the pushback against what we think here is a fair solution to the immigrant situation. Let's put aside for a moment the Dreamers. And by the way, what I thought was very interesting is when Pelosi spoke last week about the Dreamers, there was a protest. People were protesting her, saying, why just think of the Dreamers? What about the other 11 million people? So let's focus on the other 11 million people. The argument from the other side is, why reward people that broke the law? What about all the people that didn't break the law? Mm-hmm. How do you handle that? Yes, I agree. They'll say people here shouldn't be hurt, but yet they didn't play fair. How do you argue that's not as important as the fact that they're already here and have roots here?
Well, one can say that the folks who weren't playing fair were the businesses that hire them. And the reality is that our economy is directly dependent on low-wage, cheap labor from the South. And so you find people meeting demand, both a need coming from a country with a great deal of poverty and meeting an employment need up here in the United States. So it's hypocritical to blame individuals who have been meeting a need that we've all benefited from. I know that during the recession and different recessions, it's really the immigrant community who comes together that really has brought us out of recessions. Individuals who've got together to buy homes, for example, and who spend locally. So it's I think we have to recognize the contradiction there, and that these are people who are hardworking folks who have contributed to our community, who also, by the way, pay taxes for the most part, and yet will never see the benefit of, for example, Social Security because if they do have a Social Security card, it's not a legal one. So these are folks who are not going to receive those benefits, yet they do contribute a great deal to our economy. I think it's imperative that we look at those folks. I mean, even Ronald Reagan saw it. I mean, Ronald Reagan, the president who brought us amnesty, understood the realities of our economy and our need for immigrant labor. And again, we can go back, and the reality is we're all immigrants on this what we call Turtle Island, which is the U.S.
Well, you know, it's so interesting because even today, administration leaders are saying that illegal immigrants take away jobs from Americans, and there's no evidence to support that.
No.
And, you know, how many Americans want to pick grapes in 90-degree weather? And I think that you're going to start to see, if this actually gets even worse, you're going to see some real dislocations in businesses that can't do the job.
Right. And the reality as well, when speaking to folks here in Santa Barbara, what they do relate with the most is the immigrants who take care of their children, their elderly, the sick, who clean their homes, who pick their produce, who cook their food. I mean, these are people that we become very dependent on, who are very much part of the fabric of our community. And that's why I've been very heartened to hear members of our community who say, we need to defend those folks. Those are our people. They're our neighbors.
Isn't it interesting that the number of communities that have firsthand knowledge of immigrants tend to be more liberal? So many of the states that are so opposed to immigration are in the middle of the country. You know, how many Mexicans are flooding to South Dakota? Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just amazing that it's driven by fear, mm-hmm. and it's really unfortunate.
Yeah.
They don't have firsthand experience.
Although immigrants have migrated all over the U.S., and it would be interesting. There's a film, The Day Without a Mexican. It would be very interesting if all the Mexican labor actually all left all these red states, and what kind of economic impact that might have.
You're listening to AHAR Presents About Education on AM 1290 KZSB, and we'll be right back.
Habitat for Humanity of Southern Santa Barbara County is building strength, stability, and self-reliance through shelter. Habitat has completed construction on 19 new homes for affordable homeownership. We'll build 3 new affordable homes this spring and has repaired over 35 homes through the A Brush with Kindness program. To learn more about how you can support Habitat by volunteering, donating, or shopping at the Habitat Restore, visit sbhabitat.org or call 692-2226.
Founded by a UCSB grad, Deckers Brands has grown into a global driver of lifestyle footwear. From humble beginnings in 1973, Santa Barbara has been a key element of the business, defining the company's culture, providing home base for many employees, and inspiring product innovation each year. For a first-hand experience, stop by the Deckers Brands headquarters in Goleta, 250 Coromar Drive, from 10 to 7, Monday through Saturday, 11 to 5 Sunday, and shop their new brand showcase retail test lab. Guaranteed, you'll see a new side to Deckers' portfolio, from footwear to handbags to home furnishings.
Celebrating 50 years of serving loyal regular guests and first-time visitors, the Pierre Lafond Market and Deli invites you to enjoy their huge selection of fresh-baked sweets, cookies, carrot cake, muffins, and the famous farm cake, granola, Oreo popcorn, wine cake, homemade soups, and the popular fresh juice bar. Or get a coffee drink or fresh-squeezed juice and peruse the famous wall of greeting cards at the Pierre Lafond Market and Deli. Open 6 a.m. to 8 p.m. daily in the Plaza del Sol, Montecito Village.
Here's a question. Do you enjoy experiencing the best of Santa Barbara? Tasty restaurants, scenic hiking, local banking experts. That's right, local banking experts. Montecito Bank and Trust was voted best bank again by the Santa Barbara Independent, Santa Barbara News Press, and Santa Ynez Valley News Readers. Plus, they have over 40 years of experience, 10 branches from Solvang to Westlake, a convenient on-the-go mobile banking app, and a savvy team of local decision makers. Visit Montecito.bank today. Montecito Bank and Trust, member FDIC.
Welcome back to AHA Presents About Education. AHA, helping teens achieve goals, surmount challenges, stop bullying, and communicate and listen effectively. I'm Neil Kreisel, and we're here with Marcos Vargas, the executive director of the Fund for Santa Barbara. You know, and I just read a thing saying AHA helps teens stop bullying. And bullying can manifest itself in so many ways.
That's right.
So, has there been an increase in bullying, particularly against Mexicans, because of the political environment we're in? Do you sense that?
Absolutely. In terms of if children that are undocumented, for example, and if it's really clear that they're undocumented, there's been bullying. Also against refugees and Muslims as well. Clearly continues to be some bullying targeting LGBTQ young people. So it's something that's actually continues to be somewhat prevalent in our communities and in our schools. But finding that the schools are really stepping up and creating no bullying zones in their schools, and really promoting much more engaged citizenship and problem solving.
One of the initiatives that AHA has been involved in for a number of years is restorative justice, which is, you know, a way of making the perpetrator understand the pain that he or she is causing, and as opposed to just simply punishing.
Mm-hmm.
And that's been, I think, a success. It's been in the high schools now for a while, and hopefully it'll make a difference.
And the Fund for Santa Barbara has supported grassroots efforts and restorative justice as well. So we're really pleased that that's become much more of the norm.
So I'm not surprised that a Mexican, someone of Mexican heritage is the executive director of the Fund for Santa Barbara, but are you the first?
I would be the first for this organization.
Yeah, so... is that an important thing that have happened?
I think so. I think it's a reflection, it's a positive reflection of this organization that we are committed to diversity and committed to serving the broad community. And because of the demographic change, it is kind of a big deal, particularly if you think of the immigrant population, Latino population up in North County. I've been spending a lot of time up there, and it was a big deal for a Latino to be hired as the executive director of this institution. We don't see enough Latino representation in organizations like this. And so I have to say I was quite embraced in the community, but also it made me much more accountable to what the fund can do to support social change efforts up there in an area where the need is just so great. And so I'm excited about bringing my experience, my cultural experience, my political experience to the organization. And I think it's only going to help strengthen the organization in terms of how we're perceived in the broader community as well. I think Latinos need to be more engaged in environmental issues, for example. Folks don't realize that polls taken of Latino voters show that voters are much more supportive investments in renewable energy and environmental issues. Yet, most of the time, we don't think that Latinos are engaged, are aware, or are engaged in those efforts. So I think it's important that in my role that I speak out and engage more effectively the Latino community and bring them into local efforts to improve our environment and improve our overall community.
Well, I think that's so important, and I have not yet seen this in print, but I've heard it anecdotally from a number of people that in the 2016 election, the percentage of Latino voters was less than it was in 2012, mm-hmm. and I just don't get it. Mm-hmm. You know why people stayed home if that's true, whether it, suppression, whether it was frustration, but there couldn't have been more an important election for not only what I think is, liberal-minded Americans, but Latino.
Well, we definitely have work to do, and engaging more effectively and civically the Latino community, including naturalization. We have quite a number of individuals that are permanent residents who really should be encouraged to become naturalized citizens and increase voter participation. Yes, it was an election that we believe was very important, but it just wasn't resonating to community folks who are dealing directly with these issues. So I think those organizations out there that are providing either direct services or are doing engaged in community organizing need to do a much more effective job of engaging our Latino voters.
Last point, I don't want to hammer this to death, but, when Trump announced his presidency bid in June of 2015, he spoke in front of 12 people at Trump Tower, and he said that, I think it was in the second paragraph that, we have to stop the Mexicans, they're all bad hombres. And I said, he's not going to get 1% of the vote. You can't say that. In a country that has so many Latino people. So when you say people weren't energized, I mean, what do you need to drop a bomb? I mean,
I think where it resonated the most was in those red states where there were racism and xenophobia is alive and well and very strong. And that's clearly where it resonated. But yes, we still need to do more work in engaging our Latino voters.
And you also involve in social justice for not just Latinos, or not just, but,
yeah, of course,
but LGBT.
Exactly.
And
these are very important issues. And so the fund has actually been at the forefront. And many times organizations or campaigns that haven't received funding from other organizations, other traditional philanthropic organizations, will first come to the Fund for Santa Barbara and get their kind of credibility, and later on they go on to seeking funds from other groups. We're very happy to have been there for the early development of groups like Just Communities, which is about restorative justice, building leadership among our young people. Future Leaders of America and groups like that that are doing tremendous work initially came to the fund, and we continue to support their efforts.
Yeah, you know, it's what's so interesting is that in my experience, and I've read a number of pieces about this, is that whatever your background is, unless you're the prince, you ought to consider other people's issues because it's all part of the same deal.
That's right.
So even if you don't care about LGBT rights, if you allow prejudice to take hold, it's going to come back to you because it will be allowed. People will become more tribal and more insular.
Right.
So, you know, one of the, you know, I'm going to market your organization now. One of the ways you can market social justice is that even if the issues that that group is not that important to you, it is important to you simply because it provides for a more openness among your neighbors.
That's right. Absolutely.
And if elected, am I running for office?
I'll vote for you.
Thank you.
Can I just make one announcement?
Yes.
So, you know, we do raise, as I mentioned, it's individual donors that are the ones that really build the Fund for Santa Barbara and give us the opportunity to provide grant support to local organizations. Our big fundraiser is coming up. It's Bread and Roses, and it's October 14th. Inviting folks to come and hang out with 800 plus of your other local like-minded progressive people here in Santa Barbara County and support the work of the fund, but more importantly, support social change and progressive values here in Santa Barbara County.
And this is a I'm just looking at the invitation now, and it's very inexpensive. I think so. I mean you can just you can be a big donor, but you can also get in for $75.
That's right. And have a great time. QAD is a beautiful venue there, so overlooking the ocean, and have great food and silent auction items that are great. And but it's community. It's about community. People enjoy this event because they get to see and interact with folks that they know also care about our community, about our nation and our world.
And I see that one of the sponsors is one of our sponsors, Deckers.
That's right.
So everyone should go and wear either Uggs or Tevas or something to show their support for Deckers
there
as well.
You go.
You're listening to AHA Presents About Education on AM 1290 KZSB, and we'll be right back with our final segment.
For more than 20 years now, the unique landscape and people of the Santa Barbara community have helped grow Deckers brands into the lifestyle footwear leaders they are today. Newly opened at their headquarters in Goleta, the Deckers brand showcase allows you to explore and shop the UGG, Teva, Sanuk, Hoka, and Ahnu brands while you're likely to discover something new or potentially receive an in-store special offer. At 250 Coromar Drive in Goleta, the showcase is open to the public 10 a.m. to 7 Monday through Saturday and 11 to 5 on Sunday.
You're invited to dine indoors or on the secluded garden patio, the sunny patio, or the covered creekside patio with fireplace at Pierre Lafond's Montecito Wine Bistro, where you'll enjoy the popular pizzas and many other dishes from the wood-burning oven, daily specials from Chef Victor, and selections from the elevated wine menu featuring Lafond and Santa Barbara Winery wines. Open daily at 11 for lunch, wine, cocktails, dinner, incredible desserts, and a daily happy hour from 3 to 6 with very unique appetizers, in the Plaza del Sol, Montecito Village.
Habitat for Humanity of Southern Santa Barbara County is building strength, stability, and self-reliance through shelter. Habitat has completed construction on 19 new homes for affordable homeownership. We'll build 3 new affordable homes this spring and has repaired over 35 homes through the A Brush with Kindness program. To learn more about how you can support Habitat by volunteering, donating, or shopping at the Habitat Restore, visit sbhabitat.org or call 692-2226. Here's a question. Do you enjoy experiencing the best of Santa Barbara? Tasty restaurants, scenic hiking, local banking experts. That's right, local banking experts. Montecito Bank and Trust was voted best bank again by the Santa Barbara Independent, Santa Barbara News Press, and San Ynez Valley News Readers. Plus, they have over 40 years of experience, 10 branches from Solvang to Westlake, a convenient on-the-go mobile banking app, and a savvy team of local decision makers. Visit Montecito.bank today. Montecito Bank and Trust, member FDIC.
Welcome back to AHA Presents About Education. AHA helps teens manage their emotions, support their peers, and serve their community. I'm Neil Kreisel, and we're here with Marcos Vargas, the executive director of the Fund for Santa Barbara.
By the way, Neil, I like the way you pronounce my name. You do a really good job there.
Well, I'm from New York.
Oh, okay.
I have to concentrate even harder. I speak two languages. I speak East Coast and West Coast.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah.
Very good.
But I don't surf yet. So you mentioned that you were a community organizer, and the only other community organizer I know is Barack Obama.
That's right.
So tell us about what that means as a community organizer.
Well, you know, I'm kind of a natural community organizer. As I mentioned, in middle school, I got very involved with the anti-war movement, and then later became very involved with the United Farm Workers and did organizing in Orange County in high school for the United Farm Workers when they were during the Great Boycott. So it's about relationships. It's about building power. It's about engaging people where they're at and building their power. It's true. Barack Obama was our organizer in chief, and I'm kind of proud to say that my formal organizing training was actually by the same organization that trained Barack Obama when he was in East Chicago, and that's the Gamaliel Foundation, and they came out of this movement of community organizers back in the '60s. That's Saul Alinsky. I don't know if you're familiar with that name, but Saul Alinsky kind of created this whole movement around community organizing. But it's a pretty incredible tools that it really is about, that could be utilized in almost every sector, from the business sector, the public sector, and certainly nonprofit and community sector. And that's, how do you use relationships to build power? How do you bring people together who are concerned about the same issue and build their effectiveness to create social change? So it's incredible tools. I was trained in the same kind of training that also Cesar Chavez was trained in, and their idea was bring people to people together through community services, direct services, food services, and so forth. Engage them, and then have house meetings where you can talk about the issues, and from there begin to build the power of individual folks, just everyday people who were concerned over their neighborhood and their families.
One of the probably most effective, and I use the word loosely, community organizers, is President Trump. He has been able to grab a group of people and have them coalesce around ideas. Mm-hmm. Now, it's not community organizing in the traditional sense, but it shows you the power of finding commonality and getting people to move on it.
Manipulation. In fact, you know, manipulation actually is a word that's used in community organizing. Yeah. How do you shape people's thoughts and minds and their actions? And so, yes, he's been very effective at manipulating.
Yeah. This is radio. I wish you could have seen the expression on Marcos's face when I said to him that community organizing, one of the better people is President Trump. I thought he was going to throw something at me. But it's true. So, as the final question, are there internships available?
Absolutely. The fund really is one of those organizations it's about people at many levels, from donors and volunteers. We have 100 volunteers at this one fundraiser alone, you can imagine. The volunteers that volunteer on our grant-making committee, but we also put a lot of energy into internships. And so each year we have, I believe, as many as 8 to 10 interns that work for the fund, young people who we provide some stipends for, and they get to have a great experience in philanthropy and social change. So it's a great experience. So, yes, people should get in touch with the Fund for Santa Barbara.
At www.fundforsantabarbara.com.
Exactly. You
got it. And further, you want to be a volunteer or give money or go to the event on October the
14th.
Thank you so much, Marcos, for being here. And thank everyone for listening. And we'll be back next week at the same time with another edition of AHA Presents. It's